Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
I'm Patrick Barrett.
Today is what, August 13th?
Is it?
2019? Is
my
that right?
God, time
flies. Or is it 12th? 12th? 13th? What is it?
Is it July?
It's the 13th. No, no.
It's August?
It's August 13th.
August came too soon.
Yeah, for those of us in the academic world, you know, it's the quick countdown, getting ready to go back to work.
Ah, you academics.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tough job.
I love you so.
Yeah, well. Somebody's got to do it.
Is anything happening in Cambridge?
Nothing at all.
Oh,
good night.
My God. Good night. Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Actually, this afternoon, just now, actually, on the way over, I dropped by for the third continuation of the recess affordable housing overlay ordinance committee hearing.
I cruised in for half a second to pull on George Metzger's beard, and then I just ran right out.
That's it, yeah. Now, I went there. I think they were talking about reviews versus sunset clauses and whatever. And honestly, I got so disgusted, I said, I've got to leave the building now.
They had a big book of amendments they were going through. And I talked to George for half a second. It seemed like it took him about 2 hours to go through two of them. So,
it's interesting. The thing is, and again, I mean, I hope the whole thing goes down in flames. But the truth is that what I'm watching them do is methodically go through and in a stumbly, error-prone way, trying to essentially rewrite residential and to some degree other zoning around the city, right, which is something maybe they should have been doing all along, but they're only doing it in this very, very specific way now.
Well, the only thing that I can say about it is, having sat through exactly 2 seconds of the amendment process this afternoon, you've got a CDD there, you've got other city departments there, you're going through all this junk. Is there something that's going to come out of this? What a colossal waste of everybody's time. And in the summer.
And in the summer, right? Well, I mean, they want to try and come up with some mechanism for creating more government housing, you know? I mean, that's fundamentally what this is about.
Right.
So, anyway, that is what's happening. I have one question for you, though.
Please.
Right? So, I'll have many questions for you. Was it in June 12th, I think, they passed the Business Improvement District for Central Square.
Oh.
And you are a property owner.
I am.
Soon to be barkeep.
Oh, that's true. That is true.
Hotelier, is that a correct word?
Hotelier, I believe.
Hotelier. All right, Mr. Hotelier.
Right? That's why I'm growing a beard, a mustache.
That's right. You got to look the part here. No, you got to look more like either Humphrey Bogart or Sydney Greenstreet, one or the other.
Definitely in the market for a monocle. I don't know where to get one, but
right.
Harvard Eye has one.
The place will be called Rick's.
Right. What's your question?
My question is this. All right, so they passed this business improvement district,
yeah,
right? And it was, you know, great anticipation. So not that we're expecting miracles to happen in 2 months, but it's been 2 months. So
it has been.
Is there any updates, anything worth saying?
Well, Central Square is fixed. Everything's clean.
Hallelujah.
All the issues we've had are absolutely gone. So you're welcome. It's, you know, the passing of the bid was the first big hurdle. Then it's up to Mike Monesteam, who is now the director of the bid,
right,
to put forth a budget, to adopt a board, which we have done,
right,
and to adopt an executive board, which we are working on doing. And then we're going to have some rollouts slowly in the end of August and September with our ambassadors.
Right.
So it just, organizationally, it does take time, and it's one of those things that, like, unless you actually get the legislative piece of it passed, doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to get into it until that's done. And then looking at what your budget actually is, and as I've told Michael many times, and we both agree, the aspirational portions of our budget we put over here, and the actual functional portions of our budget, which are the things we've been talking about, services for Central Square, we focus on that first. So.
Right.
It's all incremental, which is how I love to do everything.
Me too.
And it just takes a little bit of time. But you'll see it start to ramp up in September.
Now, the thing is that in the past few years, it was sort of under the auspices of the Central Square Business Association. It was sort of organization of there were some events over University Park. There were...
rest in peace.
Right. Right. May she rest in peace. But the thing is there have been some events that have been orchestrated over at the Prospect and Bishop Allen lot, whatever, Is that just sort of an autopilot because there was a contract made with, or an arrangement made with another party?
There's a transition from the Central Square Business Association into the bid. We're still an active entity because a lot of us care about Central Square and we want to be active. We want to make sure that we don't miss a beat, really. So a lot of those, especially the functions at University Park and in Prospect, have been in, we have planned those months in advance.
Right.
So those are still not an autopilot because they still require Michael and our teams to interact with them, but they've been in the works for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's been great. We've got like, what, three summers straight of kind of programming in places where we normally wouldn't see programming. It's been a really great thing.
Yeah, exactly, because some jerk completely killed, Jill Brown Park. It's been dead.
Actually, speaking of
Jill Roan Brown Park.
Right, and yeah, because we're in the studio, we actually look right out here with the Mass and Main building. Patrick building is up diagonally over there.
The Patrick building. Tuscanini block.
The Tuscanini block, indeed, yes.
Sugar Road.
But you know, it's really kind of nice. So, you know, I get very optimistic when I look across and I see the old one, the building. Was that Apollo Dental that had, it says the white.
Which I absolutely
Lafayette Square.
Did not understand why Charlie Sullivan wanted that building back until they brought it back. And now when I walk by it, I'm like, I absolutely.
Boy, am I glad that's there.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm glad it's here because the building in back of it is ugly.
Right. But the thing is the building, you talk about the one that's fronting on Columbia Street.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but the thing is it may turn out to be a good functional building, right? I mean, I don't know what they're going to actually have when all is said and done on the ground floor. But is that housing above on the upper
floor? It's housing, but it's a very kind of specialized housing. The units themselves are incredibly small, and they have shared living spaces, I believe, on every floor. So if you want, you could live there and have a kitchen, a bath, and a bed, and then your living room is...
You go down the hall to get a shower?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like it's kind of like adult dorm, which
well, listen, I gotta say, the thing is that people, you know, when you talk about affordable housing overlay and all these things here, people do have to be a little bit more creative when talking about housing today, because listen, I've known a lot of students who come as graduate students at MIT. All they really wanted was a little. If you gave them a cubicle, you know, they had a little bed in it, and so they could spend 8 hours there, drink a cup of coffee, and then go study.
So I saw this kind of this thing on, I forget which news network it was on, but it was in San Francisco where they had this sort of co-op living set up where people were paying, you know, $1,200 to have a bed on a bunk bed in a house, but they just filled the house with bunk beds. I'm not suggesting we do that, but I think, you know, in some places where housing and market is particularly tight, it makes sense to look at all those little kind of things that, in terms of creating density out of existing spaces.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. So I think I saw something where
you and I might go, oh, I would never live there, but you know, someone will.
Listen, when I first arrived here, I might have been more than happy to live there.
Oh, when I moved here when I was like 18, I would have lived in any of that, but not. I wouldn't have paid those prices, but I would definitely.
Right.
No, definitely lived on the couch for quite some time.
Actually, I think I think I saw a notice is it this Friday from noon to six? The folks from you know, the operators of that are actually having a little event over here.
I believe
Jill Brown Run Park.
August 16th. That's all right.
Yeah, that's this Friday.
Yeah, they're opening up the. I know because they asked me if I was doing any street work, and I said no, we are done.
Yeah.
But they're having the grand opening. They've already listed the units on for rent.
Right.
So it's kind of exciting to see that place activate. I'm a little weary about what they're planning for the ground floor.
Yeah.
I hope they do the right thing because if they don't, I'm coming after them.
Well, you know, the thing is the, you know, they really have to think creatively about how to use the ground floor retail. Everybody's got to think creatively how to do this to make it work best, you know.
Well, the ground floor was a gift to them. It was part of their zoning that they got the exemption for those floors to put on the upper areas. So, in theory, they're making all of their money upstairs so they can subsidize the downstairs.
Right.
If it turns out that they're keeping those spaces vacant to not do that.
Well, that's another matter.
Let's just hope they don't do that.
That's right. Let's hope for the best, right? Now, the thing is, I don't know what the latest is on when the Mass and Main, the big building, is supposed to open up.
Market Central, guys.
Market Central.
Get your link on, right? Yeah. My goodness.
Yeah, but you can still see there's some work going on in that building right in here. But I'll tell you, I've kind of reached this point of like fatigue where I kind of just want to see things actually open and operational.
Oh, you mean both, man. I mean, as one of the contributors to the death of this square, I can't wait till I open up. I really can.
And we're and Morris Nagar's building over on Essex Street, you know, we could argue about cost price points and all of those things.
Or I don't argue about price points, let's argue about the green and the beige.
But I was just walking by there today and they've just milled down Essex Street, ground it down, and they're sort of ready to repave it and get it nice.
Which I'm sure Morris was super excited to redo the street.
Right. Yep. But, you know, listen, it'll you know, it's finally starting to look like it's going to happen. I mean, I think I was talking to him and he said they were hoping to actually get it rented. The apartment's rented starting September 1st. I think that's a little optimistic, but it could happen.
Well, Eversource has been a real thorn in our side in this particular area because between Market Central and Morris's project, you know, they've really had to do a lot of sort of almost like a shell game of shutting down substations to get everything up line. And we actually we're still waiting for power for my building, which they've, you know, they were supposed to have done a couple of weeks ago. So it's a, it can be a long process. And believe me, like Morris wants that place open yesterday. You know, that's not something he wants to drag.
That's really true. So anyway, you know, maybe in the not so distant future, we'll have your building open. Yep. We'll have Market Central.
Mean was a better name.
I did. This clearly was a better name. Right?
Market Central is like, what the hell is Market Central?
Yeah. Morris will be open in there, and then maybe one of these years they'll resolve the unresolved matters at Vail Court up on Bishop Allen and Temple.
Well, Vail Court was, I mean, that was interesting. We spoke about it so many times now, but like eminent domain may have been the right thing to do, but eminent domain with no plan just means it's going to sit there.
That was a the eminent domain proceedings that I tend to respect are the ones that are initiated by the city manager's office on their own, as opposed to being politically driven. And in my opinion, this was a politically driven choice. Oh, yes. I mean, I understand why, you know, because there was a lot of impatience about it. But the thing is that the demands to have it, that property taken by eminent domain were generated by the city councilors.
Well, wouldn't it be a fun thing for the city to get over themselves a little bit? When I say the city, I don't mean the actual city. I mean the council. And, you know, realize there's a neighbor right next door who has like an acre of land that's a parking lot, combined lots, public-private, build.
That's exactly what should happen there.
And
I talked to the city manager about it, and he says he wishes there was a way. Because honestly,
there is a way. You walk across the street and say, hey, buddy.
Right. I mean, I think was it that the big lot on the corner of Prospect and Bishop Allen is actually there are two lots there, right? They're tied. What was that? You call it accessory parking for the tall building.
Yeah.
We used to call it the Tofius building. I don't know what it's called.
Which, if you look at that lot, even at like max capacity, there's nobody there.
There's nobody there. Yeah. So it's there only as a formal zoning requirement. But the thing is, that could be relaxed.
The only thing that's going to happen is watch when they try to build there, they're like, well, we used to have the Central Square Flea there. We had all these markets there. You can't take that away from us.
Right.
Even though no one was using it before. And we put stuff there because
it's always
they
the danger
let us.
When
they were generous to do it.
It's always a danger when you actually try and do something really nice.
Never do nice things for anybody.
Right. I remember that. I can show you places where there were community gardens where the property owner, out of the kindness of their heart, they said, leave. As a community garden, and then when it was actually time, or maybe somebody passed away and the property something else was going to happen, it was suddenly a huge thing because somebody had actually been generously letting the property
look at the courthouse example. They're down in that First Street garage, they had 125 spaces that they told people this is a temporary condition.
I know,
and now people are showing up like, my grandfather used to park there, and his grandfather parked there, and we parked there from you're like, what the hell? That is such nonsense.
Very much nonsense, you know. But actually, that thing, it's funny how all these different issues are being conflated right now, and people are being characterized as being, you know, your group is for this and anti this right here. Let me just sort of say where I stand, okay? Just pontificating.
Pontificating.
We may very well be in agreement on these things here. It's like possible. I'm not in favor of this affordable housing overlay, but I do want to see the redevelopment of the courthouse. Yeah. But I mean, every single day I read a thing and saying like, you people are opposed to the overlay. All you want to do, you're also opposed to the courthouse or whatever. And I said, that's not true. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of us who really like to see a redevelopment of that courthouse building, but don't like the overlay, you know, but we get kind of boxed in.
I have said many times, if this was one, the affordable overlay was one gigantic practical joke to make people in West Cambridge squirm, I would be down. That sounds like so much fun. And it's so easy because they get so uncomfortable with everything. Right. But it's an objectively bad idea. The courthouse plan currently, which has been in for like 8 years now, the people who are opposed to it, you know, either want it to be a dog park or they want it to be affordable housing, which I think is like
I think
kind of cynical. Like, why would you want to put poor people in a jail?
I'm gonna honestly say, again, shoot me if you want, but the thing is that the people who are saying we want the courthouse to be used for affordable housing, what a joke! You don't really, if the city turned around and said, yeah, great, we've decided to like move, you know, have Ringe Towers 3 relocated down here, right here on Spring Street or 40 Thorndike Street. He says, now, are you happy with that? And then they go, well, I don't know if you really want to be concentrating that here now. Well, so to me, it's just a lot of phony baloney.
It's the throw everything against the wall and hope it sticks method of trying to block something.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Michael Connolly, you've been a naughty little boy in terms of how you phrased this argument. You know, with these meetings that I've heard about, talking about DCAM, making statements that are not actually
Division
true.
Of Capital Assets Management and Maintenance.
Oh my God, that was good. That was really good.
I tried. Yeah, there we go.
But and just giving this sort of false sense that the city wants to buy this building, that the city, with political pressure, the city is going to buy it for a dollar, which is not true. That ship sailed like 8 years ago. But like, moreover, where was he for the past 7 years in this discussion?
Right.
Where was anybody really saying like, oh, we have a, or like, when I show up at the city council, when I've got a wild zoning idea or some kind of crazy idea, I usually show them a plan, data, and support, right? Yeah. So like, in that order. And I see none of that due diligence, which is why I've been very critical of Mike and saying like, where's the work? Where are you showing us that this actually makes sense?
You know, in my ideal world, and this ain't going to happen because this ain't such an ideal world, is that we would be kind of replacing a lot of our state representatives and maybe even state senators with people who are just being practical. Now, some are.
They shouldn't run unopposed. That's for damn sure.
Right. Certainly shouldn't run unopposed. But the thing is that when people are just using their position as representatives simply to be, you know, pontificating ideology 90% of the time and being a practical elected official 10% of the time, you know, to me, that's not representation at all.
Well, Mike was an activist, and then he got, after several attempts, he became a state rep. You know, at some point in time, you kind of have to pivot a little bit and be a state rep for everybody, not just the activist mode, because that's not entirely what got you elected. Right. And it's not what's going to keep you in office, except for the fact that, like him, I think Myrick Decker, like they all run unopposed. Someone opposed them.
Listen. I like Marjorie, but the thing is
that... You do?
I do like Marjorie, but the truth is that I don't like this notion that you should only have sort of cartoon characters as your...
I don't like rent control, and she signed on to his rent control thing. That's
she did?
That to me was...
Sayonara, Marjorie. No, it's... the thing is, there's a certain kind of a new populism that seems to be afoot, where... political people, elected officials, basically saying what they think of as sort of like what's going to get them attention. And, and I think in not such a good way, so actually not to harp on the overlay thing, but the thing is there are a lot of the people who are coming out saying how much we really believe in this and that. But the truth is that the people who say that you're really going to get this, they're not going to actually have access to the benefit they think they're getting.
I see a lot of people... for the overlay conversation that like show up saying like this housing is for me, and I see a lot of younger kids who are either an undergrad or in grad school, and I don't think when people close their eyes and imagined who would be showing up to support this for themselves, it'd be that particular group of people in terms of their need.
Right.
It's really not compelling in my opinion to say, okay, well, we need to work really hard to house 20 somethings because, gosh darn it, I can't come up with a reason really. Because housing expensive. It's been expensive since I was a kid. I mean, when I first moved to the city, I didn't move into a plush, $200 a month apartment. I lived in a basement place in the Fens that, four of my buddies lived with, and five dudes in a basement. Terrible.
Well, one thing that I think maybe sort of speaks volumes is that, when the Volpe site was the current controversy a couple of years ago, some of the MIT graduate students and MIT students generally were, rising up, saying how MIT, you have to house more graduate students, you have to house your postdocs, you have to do this, provide housing here, you know, and make a dent, because if we want to actually go out, we're going to be taking housing from other people. So that was the big.
Well, that was Big Mike when his 5,000 unit manifesto that came out.
He was just capitalizing on whatever the current populist thing happened.
Well, he called them out. He said, "No, okay, 5,000 units of graduate housing. Let's build it right now. What does that look like?" So you're talking like, let's just say bare minimum, 450 square feet a unit,
right?
Times 5,000,
right?
Plus 15% for common areas and that. You know, you're like, you're in millions of square feet, and where's that going?
Right. But I think that, you know, the harping on the notion that the universities should be housing all of their students is stupid, because, if I may use that word, because the truth is that not everybody who's a graduate student or postdoc wants to live in student housing. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is that they should probably be producing more.
Yeah.
How much more? You can argue about that. It does cost money to build things, but, so I'm not trying to beat them up. But the thing is that, you know, everybody kind of walked away from that discussion, and then they all started harping on the, whatever the latest little bit of political intrigue was with overlay, as if, you know, like, well, whatever happened to the demand for MIT housing, you know, or Harvard housing? Where did that go? You think that the overlay is going to deliver that for you?
It's not. Forget it. And I think there's actually something going on in North Cambridge in particular that people aren't really paying much attention to. And as you look at where people are clustering, where the value of rentals have gone up considerably, it's not in those outlying areas. And in fact, a lot of the development in Alewife has stymied the rate of increase in rents in North Cambridge considerably. There are people who I know who are landlords who are calling me and telling me, you know, we're not getting, you know, whenever it's advertised that like a two-bedroom costs $3,000 across the board, like, we're not getting anywhere close to that. And in fact, in a lot of our cases, they have units they cannot rent or that are going down. It's not because they're looking for an exorbitant amount of money. It's just that there are clustered areas in the city. Central Square is one of them. Harvard Square is one of them. Kendall Square is definitely one of them, where the demand is exacerbated because there's no supply.
Right.
And in North Cambridge, not the people who are coming here, they don't want to live there because it's not really accessible by public transit, and it's not really walkable in the same way these areas are. So they're going to see depressed values as they start building this little enclave housing up there, while down here, our rents are continually going up because there's no supply. And then people are like, well, we just built 300 units at Market Central. Isn't that problem solved? And you're like, no, you need 3,000, maybe fucking 10,000. Fleischman.
I honestly believe that in fact Central Square could still support a significant amount of new housing.
Yeah.
I also believe, and I also know, that in a not so distant future, when the green line starts to finally come through, Union Square Somerville is going to actually start seeing not just hundreds, possibly thousands of units of housing appearing in, you know, and all that's pretty accessible by T. It's going to be right on the green line. And it's also a quick bike ride, you know, to MIT. It's going to actually provide a lot of housing opportunities for people. And my feeling about affordability in housing has always been that what the key to providing affordability in housing is giving people options.
Yep.
And if you have people options, then they can say to your greedy landlord, and they can go, oh, you want $6,000 for that hovel? Screw you, I'm going to Union Square. You
know? But also, if you look at that, the road going to Union Square, there's Columbia down through Webster.
Yeah.
When you cross Cambridge Street and you go to Webster Street, you see trash place, recycling, Phil's towing, junk.
And a lot of that's all going away.
And a lot of it's going away, but what they're building there is two-story and three-story housing, which is absolutely a missed opportunity. Right. The area zone BA, which is allowing you to...
Actually, I'm going to even jump right in there and say that under Envision Cambridge, mm-hmm. those areas, we did a walking tour down there, and they were specifically targeting. When they talked about corridors, they were talking about places like that.
Right.
Right? You know, and then now corridor is just a phrase that they use to try and promote something entirely different.
But that area right there is prime time for a little bit of height, a little bit of density. But right now it's BA zoned, which if you're building a commercial building, you can go to 65 feet. If you're building residential, you have to use C2B zoning, which makes it 45 feet.
Right.
So even if you can max out your density, you're still like 40% under what your FAR would allow for if you're building commercial. That to me is like those little nips and tucks, like the Department of Little Things.
Right.
It's, you know, there is something you could absolutely change right now, build a couple hundred units of housing right in that area alone.
You mean there are other options to consider other than just talking about the overlay?
I've got a few.
You got a few. All right. That's pretty cool. Yeah. And actually, that, you know, well, we got only another minute. So here before we switch to the second half hour, but...
In the second half hour, we're going to bash every single candidate, so you really want to stay tuned for that.
We'll hit on some candidates here, but I would like to also talk a little, teeny bit about sort of retail and the small business districts as well, but then, you know, we can...
Well, that corridor as well is prime time for that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure when we have time, but the I'll be at the BZA Thursday night, hoping to get a variance for a business owner in Cambridge. That really shouldn't have to do this at all. But he wants to build a theater in the cultural district. I need a variance.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. Now, there's so many things that just are fixes. You need to just fix a few things. Maybe with a new council, maybe we can actually dedicate a few months, really.
You didn't say that seriously.
Well, you know, honestly, just like an omnibus zoning fix.
Yeah.
Spend some time on that.
I love it.
It would be real worth it, so... Anyway, we'll be back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye, Fleischman.